Hey Tim, did you know that Pandoran Brewmasters can turn alcohol into combat effectiveness?
Yeah, my Gil tried that strategy in real life. The results were kind of mixed.
I feel you. I rolled a Pandoran monk because I wanted inner peace. Now I just have inner cooldowns.
I know, the Shaw are proof that Blizzard looked at anger management and said, "What if it had a health bar?"
Yeah, Pandaria taught us an important lesson.
That negative emotions are dangerous?
Yes, especially when they're attackable and drop loot.
I think that the theme of this expansion is that WoW players would rather go in a raid with 24 other people and smack around a sentient, angry fart for 30 minutes instead of going to therapy.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Also, your mother is so fat, I leveled tailoring from 1 to 600 by making her pants.
Hey.
They're silly and they're goofy, mysterious and spoofy. Kemco makes them loopy, the Backtrack family. Their podcast is a blast, talking games from the past. They break down every class. Backtrack family.
Beat. Defeat. Complete.
They trash things they abhor and praise things they adore. They never are a bore. The Backtrack family.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and not with me this week, my podcast partner in crime, Matt Mason, is on his summer vacation. I actually met with him on Sunday. We had pizza with his family, and it was very fun. But this is his yearly vacation. This is when we start Matt Mason Out Month, aka MMO Month, so that we have an excuse to talk about our favorite MMO expansions. And since this is year four of this tradition, we are talking about, well, World of Warcraft, Mists of Pandaria. And I could only wrangle another fellow WoW player, R Robert Albright, aka Tam.
Hi.
And yeah, who would have thought that an April Fool's Day joke from Warcraft 3 would have ended up as a full expansion?
I'm actually kind of glad. The Pandaren race, even in Warcraft 3, were like highly loved. So people loved it, even as an April little Easter egg April Fool's thing.
Yeah, supposedly in Burning Crusade, the Alliance was supposed to get Pandaren instead of Draenei, but they decided against it because it was a race that was in such high demand that they wanted both factions to be able to play them. H hence why we've got the neutral faction thing that happened. But we'll get into more into that when we talk about the features of the expansion. But yes, I never thought that we would get to this.
Well, having Mists of Pandaria or us doing 4 years straight of MMO expansions?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
It just seems so far off, but let's take a brief musical interlude with some wonderful music from said expansion, and then we shall dive right in.
Thank you.
And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about World of Warcraft Mists of Pandaria, WoW's fourth expansion, originally announced on October 21st, 2011 at BlizzCon 2011, and then released on September 15th, 2012. I will never forget when this expansion got an announcement because my husband and I were still working at the same office. And I'd have to ask him. I remember if he had left some point, but I was getting text messages from the announcement throughout the day, and was saying like, Mists of Pandaria confirmed, because the name of the show or the name of the expansion had leaked, like it tended to, because of trademark. Mists of Pandaria, Pandaren monks, Pandaria new race, new class, Pandaren monks. And then he was reading off the racial abilities for them. It was like bouncy, Pandarens take less damage, and just kind of the amusing little things from that. And then he read off the pet battle thing that they were going to do, start letting you battle with the mini pets like Pokemon. And long before Blizzard sort of made it a meme, I literally was like, are we in the wrong time of year? Is this an April joke? Because the whole thing just sounded so not your regular WoW expansion, especially with the pet battles thing.
And what's interesting is the pet battle. Let's go over the features, and we can go into depth when we get to them more into those features.
Yep. So level cap was raised to 90 from 85. This was when they were still trying to make five levels of was it 80? Yeah, because Draenor was one to no, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, it was 80. It was let's see, Burning Crusade was 60 to 70, and then they did two expansions where it was five levels.
Okay.
So it would have been 75 to 80.
Yeah, because I just remember one expansion kind of, it was Kata, and then Kata screwed that up, right? I'm sorry, I'm switching my expansions around. Yeah, Kata screwed up the five level, the 10 level thing. So,
well, it wasn't that it screwed it up. It was going to the, oh, they want to push these out every year, and that still never happened.
Nope. Two-year thing has kind of become our, and then of course we get the new continent, Pandaria, with seven playable zones, six dungeon raids, and faction-specific capital areas. Not quite as expansive as the cities we've used to, but I like the temples. They were nice and easy to navigate.
Yeah, that honestly, that's one of my favorite things, even going back to it now, is that they're very easy to navigate and know where you're needing to go.
Though it is funny when you're used to one faction and you hop on another and the place is flipped and you've got to remind yourself that. I don't know if you ran into that.
I don't usually play too much cross faction then, and I'm trying to think if that's been really an issue for me since. I mean, I usually end up going to the wrong side period when I go back there.
I always like to play as much as I can on Horde and then switch over to Alliance, because I like to see the story from the other perspective. And this particular one story kind of had wildly different starting experiences depending on if Horde or Alliance. So I definitely need to go see that. And I'm pretty sure this was the expansion that I had finally leveled up by Worgen Rogue named Riacel. And there was that. We got the new class, Monk, the leather wearing hybrid class, DPS healing and tanking specializations. So Brewmaster was tanking, Mistweave was healing, and Walk was melee DPS.
Yeah, I remember people were very excited for Monk as a healer, because when they first announced it, it was going to be sort of like a heal while DPSing. And I know my wife was actually very excited for that, because she and I had played Ion, which has a class that can do that and does it fairly well.
Yeah,
It was a combination of like a buffer and a healer, and wow, they did not do that very well.
Yeah, I remember fans calling it Fistweave because of the hybridization of that, and I never played that healing spec. I heard that people that played it really had fun with it, and since then Blizzard has nerfed into Oblivion, so it's mostly just healing now, which I feel like kind of took away a lot of the fun of that class. I
Well,
did.
it's because its output was so low, people wouldn't take it into raids.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was that bad.
There were some who could do it very well, but it was not very good at it. People loved it, yes.
I did level up and try to play a Brewmaster, and I leveled up a Pandaren Brewmaster, an Alliance Pandaren Brewmaster, all the way to level cap, doing tanking dungeons, and I had a blast, Master, just because the rotation was very much gosh, what's the name of it? No, Rising T or Black Kick. Gosh, I am gonna butcher all of these abilities so bad. It's been so long, but there was one kick that staggered damage so that you would basically give yourself a dot so that it would stagger the damage over time, and you used your brews to remove stacks of the stack. And you could also throw a keg to b basically pull mobs and gain aggro, and then use an ability called Breath of Fire to light the mobs on fire. And b basically the whole spec was just getting into a bar. And
It was. I'm going to have fun next year when we talk about Legion with it. That'll be next year. But yeah, no. The monks class as a whole, even the healings, the DPS. I mean, it's a fun class to play. It was not a race specific class either. Everyone could be it.
except goblins and worgen at the time, which made me really sad because the worgen were my favorite alliance race, and I was very upset that you couldn't play a worgen monk, and they only rectified that recent. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Aware of it, probably. Remember it? No.
Yeah.
I do vaguely remember this now because I think the thing was they didn't want the new race because the goblins and worgens were the races from the previous expansion. They didn't want, to have them be them.
Well, and part of the problem was that the m monk had a lot of unique animations, and I don't think that they had implemented any of those animations to goblins again. And that also had a lot to do with the fact that probably in the background they were working on the new character models that were a huge feature for the next expansion.
True.
So there's that. I love the roll, using the roll as the very quick movement ability to get out of way of stuff, just
Well, even
basically
just running around.
rolling across the terrain. That ability was Blackout Kick. That's the one that your main bread and butter for master tanking, because that's what causes the shove. And you also had the summon Black Ox statue to help hold aggro as well. It was just for me anyway. It was such a fun tanking class to play, though a lot of healers didn't like it very much because supposedly if you weren't geared well, you were kind of squishy since you were a leather wearer. I mostly played that class in leveling dungeons, so I never really noticed nor cared because leveling dungeons were so easy at that point. But I never had the courage to do raid finder tank. So something about tanking in raids just kind of really intimidated me, so I've never taken any tank I've leveled via dungeons into raid.
I mean, I have a monk. I did level it up, but I mean, my bread and butter is a Frost Death Knight. That is my bread and butter.
Yeah, and my main is a Blood Elf Hunter, who I always play first, no matter what. To which this expansion had the really nice looking tiger models that were a lot more high res than some of the ones in the old world. And I still have a couple of those tigers in my stables, though some of them are retired because they were named after real life cats that I lost. And I'll always retire my hunter pets that are named after my real cats. So there's that. And yeah, we got the new race Pandaren, who for the first time was playable by both Alliance and Horde, and they've since taken this out, but you were a neutral faction and you didn't, you could talk to everybody and didn't have to pick until the very end of your starting zone, where, yeah, you got to pick Alliance or Horde. And it was kind of a neat thing at the time to be able to choose. I
Yeah,
think.
there's actually a very famous player who, through every expansion, he had a one that was like an herbalist miner who never left the starting zone and actually leveled his way up to max level. I think
Double
that they
agent.
do what?
His name was Double Agent.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think he ended up not with one of the more recent expansions because of a specific change they made. He wasn't able to do that anymore, but.
Yeah, I think when they added the allied races to the game, they had separated all of the races in their own little specific alliance and horde menu.
No,
So,
that wasn't it.
oh, that wasn't it.
No, it had to do something with like how gathering professions worked.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because that had to have sucked for that guy, since back then you couldn't mail yourself anything, since you were technically neutral. But getting ahead of ourselves, the Wandering Isle is one of my favorite starting zones in the whole game.
No, it's well put together. It's a very cohesive plot line.
The back of start on the back of a turtle. Though you say very well put together, not so much in beta because of the bottleneck. There was a spot where you had to click on a specific scroll, and it would take forever for that scroll to respawn. And all these, you'd get into beta and try to do start a panda, and all these pandas were just stuck at this one spot. And they eventually had to have it so that you automatically got credit for just being in that spot.
Huzzah.
Yeah, I think rather famously when Diablo 3 came out, there was a some promotion where you could, if you bought a year-long subscription, you got a special Diablo mount as well as access to Mists Beta, which both me and my husband did because we wanted to play early. And yeah, I remember that bit being in beta and it not being a fun time for people, but luckily they realized it and fixed it. So yeah, there was that. What were the Pandaren classes? There was warrior, hunter, mage, I don't think warlock, rogue, priest, shaman, and monk. I thought that the idea of a Pandaren druid would have been funny. Bear form, basically just getting down on all fours. Oh, I guess warlock was available.
Warlock was, weirdly enough.
Yeah, that just didn't seem very Pandaren. But I also badly wanted to play a Pandaren Death Knight, but that didn't happen until Shadowlands.
Then everyone could be a Death Knight.
So what else? Talent system revamp. They basically changed it so that every 15 levels you had a choice between three abilities, and most of them were just utility abilities. They weren't even really had anything to do with DPS except for maybe I think the last one.
Yeah, people hated it.
I didn't mind it because I wasn't a huge fan of the having to go to Icy Veins, or I guess back then it would have been elitist jerks to go pick the Optium tree. I liked being able to just kind of pick what I wanted.
Yeah, well, that was the reason why they changed it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they went back to talent tree very recently.
No, well, they changed it away from talent trees because it was becoming cookie cutter builds, and now they've gone back to talent trees, and it's still cookie cutter builds. Even with that change, where it was one talent every like 15 levels or so, it was still cookie cutter builds.
And that's exactly what they were trying to get away from.
Yeah, the problem is when you have skill trees like this, there are going to be, unless you very carefully do all the math, there are going to be some that are going to be just naturally better.
The scenario system, basically micro dungeons. They introduced this with the raid on Theramore during the pre-patch. Yeah, just basically instance little mini dungeons that you could do. Though I don't think they really do the whole scenario thing anymore. I think it's just for some like very specific quest stuff now. And I think part of why they ended up kind of getting away from just the little mini story dungeons is because they didn't really give you any reason to do them. You didn't really get that good of loot or gear out of any of that stuff. So
Oh, the
people were,
scenarios?
yeah, so people were like, well, why bother?
Yeah, going to one of my biggest complaints of WoW, they introduce some systems in like every expansion, and they tend to not stick with those systems. Like, one of the biggest things from Wrath was the vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they even had a whole raid that did them, and then like you get out of Wrath, and they're still there, but they definitely don't use them very much.
Yeah, they're not as common as they once were, and I wonder if it was because people got kind of vehicled out during Wrath. Though we'll get into getting burned out about systems in a second. And I liked the idea of mini dungeons, so that if you just wanted to hop in and do one on your lunch break, you could, and you didn't have to worry about having a healer or a tank. They just didn't give enough of an incentive to do one, do any of. Now later on when they did Miss Remix, they kind of incentivized by having some of the item slot rewards that you got in Remix, but that was about it. They also introduced dungeon challenge modes. Is this somewhat of a predecessor to Mythic?
Yes.
Yeah, because I didn't really do a lot of that stuff.
Oh, neither did I.
And then we've got the pet battle system, which, oh my God, I got so sucked into. You give
That
me
is.
a Pokemon mini game, I will put thousands of hours into that.
Yeah, there were a number of people who really enjoyed that.
And when I went to Zufu's pet battle site today to kind of look up some of the pets that were introduced and saw that Blizzard is kind of walking back some of the pet battle stuff now, and people are not happy about it because some people, that's all they do is collect pets, myself included.
I didn't realize they were walking some of that back because I don't really follow that scene.
Yeah, I don't think there were any really new pet themed world quests in Midnight. No, I might be wrong because I haven't even bought that expansion, much less played it. But I've just heard through the grapevine that kind of like archaeology, it just isn't really a th big thing like it was in past expansions. And me, that kind of sucks. But over the years, Blizzard also kind of nerfed some of the fun out of the pet battles because there were two or three pets that were considered just like top tier, always have them leveled up and on your team. And mainly because there were like three turn nukes, and Blizzard nerfed the hell out of those particular pets, and now they aren't really that fun anymore. Though another problem that the pet battle system had is that once you figured out a strategy for certain fights, you could beat the fight time. But I still had fun with it, trying to figure out the puzzle. Tangentially related, this is when they introduced the Raiding with Leashes achievement, where a lot of the old school raids drop specialty pets. Hang on one second. A lot of those older raids had certain pets that would drop, and the meta achievement for finding all of them was a pet version, mini pet version of Mr. Bigglesworth, Kel'Thuzad's cat. So as soon as I learned that that pet was going to be available, I dove into the Raiding with Leashes achievement every week, on as many tunes as I could, running various old raids and trying to get those pets so that I could get me a zombie cat.
I will admit, I was there doing that too.
My husband ended up with almost a full set of those pets too, just because anytime I got a duplicate, I would send them to him. And after that, I just start putting them on the auction house, because that was kind of a neat thing. There were certain battle pets that you could put in a cage and sell on the auction house. And every once in a while, I just like to check the auction house and just see what was on sale and what was going for pretty cheap, and just start completing my collection.
I enjoy the collection. I think this was the expansion where they actually changed the whole was I don't remember if it was this expansion or the next expansion where they actually changed like the collection system.
Yeah, account-wide achievements, pets, and mounts. is listed in the list of features.
Okay, so yeah, so it was this expansion because beforehand you just kind of had one giant list of all your stuff.
Yeah, and what something I liked about the pet battles in particular was that each pet had its own type. So you had humanoid, undead, elemental, beast, mechanical, dragon, flying, aquatic, and I think that was it. And each
Undead.
did I say undead?
I don't know, did you?
I don't know if I did or not, but yeah, there was undead pets. And each pet type not only had a little quirk to it, but also, oh, and critter. I forgot about critter. Each pet type had a little quirk to it. Like, for example, undead pets, when they get a death blow, will always resurrect for one turn and die. So you can never kill them, like, in the first shot. You've always got to deal with them with one more turn. Or the mechanical pets always revive and don't die that turn. You've still got to take them down, and if they can heal, well, they pretty much just got a free life. And each pet type had a little quirk like that that you had to maneuver around. And basically, trying to find pets that were strong against, well, as you know how Pokemon goes.
Yeah.
I loved that little that bit of strategy. So, moving on, we've got I mentioned account-wide achievements, pets and mounts. The one interesting thing is the mounts, the ones that were unique to factions sometimes would unlock the equivalent mount on the other faction if you bought
Yes.
certain ones.
Yeah, although they would not count both mounts as a as part of your mount collecting achievements.
Yeah, and this got very annoying in Legion with some classes that could have more mounts than others, depending on how many mounts were in the class hall. But
Yeah, that annoyed me to no ends because like all combined I had like X number of mounts and then like, oh, you only have this many because either they're class restricted or, you know, because you have this one on this side, it gives you this one on the other side, so it doesn't count it twice, and it's very annoying. And it's still something that's in there today.
Yeah, it always drove me nuts on my Hunter, but seeing I'm at like $4.99, so I go and either buy a mount or go run something until it drops, and I don't get the achievement. And it's like, why am I not getting the achievement? Oh, because one k this particular character may be at $4.99, but like my Paladin, has certain special mounts that count, and if I log into them, then the achievement'll ding. It was just very weird, and it's even worse for some of the mini pet stuff. I don't know how many mini pets I actually have that are considered unique for some of those metas.
Well, the pets at least are more just faction side, so it's not as bad as the mounts.
Area of effect looting, that was a huge deal.
Yes, that was. I want to say they took that from Star Wars: The Old Republic, because that was a different MMO that had come out around the same time, which introduced a sort of area looting system, which a lot of people really liked. I just wish it was a lot larger than it is.
I honestly wish that they would go to 14 system where you don't even have to touch the mob at all. Because once you get used to that, it's hard to go back to having to click the mob. But see, people like my husband don't like that system because he doesn't think that he gets anything. Or if your chat window is going too fast, you might not see what you looted. So I can kind of see why they haven't implemented anything like that because it can be kind of like, did I actually get the drop? Kind of situation. But hey, I will never go back to non-AoE looting, especially if you're if you like to farm stuff like I do. So that was a huge thing. I'm gonna skip player farms because we'll talk about that when we get into the zones. Cross realm zones, their solution to not having to shut down servers, just linking them together.
Well, they still did some merging
Oh, they.
regardless.
They did.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't sure if they had completely shut down some of the extra servers or just linked them together.
Yeah, no, they did actually link some servers together still.
Okay. But that was a huge deal. That way places didn't didn't seem as dead. Though some people didn't like the system, though I don't remember why. I know that it was complained about.
So basically, the difference between merge servers and this crossover stuff was it had to do with like if you were on a lower population server, it would just merge people from other servers that were not part of the, part of your merge server, and you would see just a bunch of people there. Well, on a lower population server, if you're trying to do quests, you would see a bunch of people there also trying to do quests. So, that would be the one, reason I could think of why people did not like it was because it's like, oh, now I have to actually contend with people for my quests.
I could see that because I know some people like to roll on low pop servers just so that they can enjoy solitude. And then my minor feature, the black market auction house, which had extremely rare items on sale for mostly for gold capped people. I don't think I've ever bought anything off of it.
Yeah, this is a way for you to buy like the mounts from the card game.
I have never seen any card game mounts. At most, I've just seen certain pets from the Argent tournament and certain transmog items that were no longer available.
Yeah, so but that was one way for them to introduce stuff that has been removed from the game or not very readily available if you have the money to buy it. I actually have stories about the company that they partnered with for that card game.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, so one of my former guildmates actually worked for an accounting firm that worked with that company, and I heard some stories. I forget. I don't remember which expansion it is. I don't remember who the person was. This was like ne many years ago. But yeah, apparently that company was making so much money that they were trying to use hookers and blow as write-off, and I'm not joking.
That was one way to get nerds like me and my husband to spend ungodly amounts of money on WoW trading cards for the off chance that we would get them out.
Or something else, yeah.
My husband did end up getting the giant chicken mount, and I ended up with just a bear, just an off-color bear. I don't even remember the name of it. That was the rarest mount I got, but I did like getting a lot of the pets that came with those. So there's that. But those were all the new features. I'm also pretty sure that this was the patch that got rid of mana for hunters and helped the got rid of their minimum range. Because I remember when that the 5.0 patch dropped, I went into Tol'Barad for the first time without having to contend with mana or having to kite mobs, and I was like, oh my God, this is a literal game changer. I can actually hit things up close.
Yeah, I actually knew some hunters specifically who did a lot of PvP who were not happy with the minimum range change. Well, it's because of the fact they knew how to manipulate minimum range.
I didn't know that. I just always got frustrated because certain classes would get right in the dead zone, and
Yeah.
once they got in that dead zone, you couldn't do anything.
Well, as I said, that this was a very specific thing for PvP where, yeah, it was, there was that dead zone, but then there were people who knew how to manipulate the dead zone on both sides.
I'm pretty sure it was also this expansion that lets you change your hunter pet to whatever spec you wanted. So no matter what pet you had, you could change it to a tank or not tank. What, gosh, I can't remember the three things that now. Cutting, tenacity, and ferocity were the three specs. Tenacity is the tank one. Ferocity is the DPS one, and I've never known what third one was supposed to be.
Also DPS.
Oh, also DPS.
Yeah, it's just a different type of DPS.
So I always kept two pets with me at all times, one tank pet and one DPS pet.
Yeah, so.
Because I think it was also that patch that gave you the mini stable that lets you run around with five different pets.
The hunter, yeah, hunters actually got some good quality of life improvements that for mists.
can't remember if that was also the patch where they got rid of ammo, or if that was Kata.
I think that was Kata.
Okay, because I tried to save my ammo just because it was unique, but then I think I accidentally vendored it because it was gray.
Oops.
So skipping ahead a little, we've got the d different zones that had popped, and we had briefly mentioned the Wandering Isle, the starting zone for all Pandaren. One of my favorite zones in the entire game. You kind of start out and you're just a trainee, going through the motions, and then some ship crashes into the turtle, and it's a prisoner ship from the Alliance. That were carrying a bunch of Horde prisoners, and you go rescue them, and you pull the ship out of the turtle, and the turtle is apparently bleeding from the ship, and that one panda chick kind of yells at you, and I hate that quest because I always want to say to her, "What else were we supposed to do, lady?" Because then after that quest, you've got to rally a bunch of healing NPC healing classes like druid and shaman to heal the turtle, and that kind of stuck the rift in between the panda girl and the panda guy that ended up becoming the respective Pandaren faction leaders for Alliance and Horde.
Yep.
So,
Doesn't end well for the Horde one.
oh yeah, he ends up dying, doesn't he?
No, he does not die.
Okay, he just got hurt really bad.
He got hurt really bad. Kind of tortured.
Forgot to mention that they in the BlizzCon they said from the beginning that Garrosh was going to be the final boss of this expansion, and I remember being kind of annoyed. It's like, why did you say that now? Why don't didn't you let the story kind of build up to that?
That's always been one of Blizzard's issues, though, is they hype they lay too many of their cards on the table sometimes.
Yeah, I didn't like that reveal. I think that we needed to see for ourselves because we already knew that Garrosh was kind of batshit crazy. I think showing his descent into madness throughout the expansion would have been a better story option. And I don't know, then when they announce the Siege of Orgrimmar raid, that's when they say that yeah, that now we're gonna go take on Garrosh.
Yeah, I mean they did do that though. They did actually like show his descent into madness, and wanting to acquire more and more power for the Horde, as the expansion goes on. They do actually show that through some of the quests and events that went on. Like at one point, you're searching for this bell that corrupts things. But they, go. But again, yeah, they laid out their cards. Oh yeah, the last boss is going to be this. Well, thanks, Blizzard. Where are we at with this? Okay, yeah. This was prob the and then this was the expansion with the worst content drought in the game.
Because I had to remember my personal timeline because I was leaving for my honeymoon the week that Siege of Orgrimmar Raid Finder wing opened because I was mad that I wasn't going to get to play it right away, but that was probably a good thing because that raid kind of sucked for newbies. And then I was remembering, oh yeah, we moved into our house, and it was literally like a year later before Warlords of Draenor came out because I was leveling alts like crazy during that whole time period. Was it like 18 months or a
Yeah,
full
it was
year?
around for a very long time, and it was people really burned out. This was really where you saw what b that Blizzard really just was starting to lose it, because it was, I mean, it was like 18 months of this of just Siege of Orgrimmar.
Yeah, and it wasn't like now where they would do something fun in between, like a remix or a Ponderstorm or something like that to kind of fill the time gently.
Nope.
We'll get into that just slightly more when we talk about Warlords, because okay, spoiler alert, that time wasn't working on quality stuff. But you start as far as the Pandaria campaign, you start out in the Jade Forest. The Horde starts on the north side and the Alliance starts on the south side. And I thought that that was one of the coolest ways to introduce an expansion because, you get shot down in an airship, you do the landfall thing, you get in a fight with the Alliance, and I think it's Nazgrim sort of has a freak out. And it's like, oh my god, Garrosh is gonna kill me. What am I gonna do? And he gets like really upset and is about to go full Shaw. And that's when a Pandaren monk steps in and kind of pulls the Shawness out of him and is like, oh, what is he says something to the effect of like, you have to control your emotions in this place. And that's when the Pandaren get used to you. And that kind of moment where that happens on the Alliance side just isn't as epic as it is on side actually. Like a guy kind of freaks out, but it isn't the
No, it wasn't Garrosh.
No, I'm sorry, I think it was Nazgrim.
Yeah,
The guy's
Nazgrim.
yeah, the guy said that Garrosh was gonna kill him because he had screwed up a mission, and he's freaking out. And that's when Pandaren show up. And I appreciated that each zone in this expansion kind of had its own storyline that wraps up at the end, really epic cutscene. Because the storyline in this one was throughout the entire zone, they're kind of talking about rebuilding the Jade Serpent statue. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this Jade Serpent statue has 3 days left till retirement. Because yeah, it gets wrecked, and it's kind of sad. And when the Jade Serpent kind of flies you to the next area, she's kind of talking about how disappointed she is in you, and you feel bad.
So bad.
But Jade Forest is a really beautiful zone to start you out in. Lots of bamboo and cherry blossom trees, and some really cool architecture. Some of the temples and cities
I
and
honest
stuff.
I mean the story may have lost the point, but like the area designers did an amazing job with this expansion. I will say that.
Because the next area you end up in is the Valley of Four Winds, which is the lush farmland area. And that's where you meet with Chen and Lili Stormstout and basically kind of follow them on their adventures to bring back Stormstout Brewery. And you meet with the farmers at Half Hill Market and kind of do some quests with them. That's where you meet, I think his name is Mudbug, the kind of really, really farmer guy that
And
runs around
you
in the.
unlocked Harvest Moon.
That was an interesting feature because people have been clamoring for player housing for a while, and this felt like a half compromise because you get a little shack to hang out in, and you can even unlock something that lets you have a hearthstone in that particular shack, but it's not a player house. But yet your little farm is still phased like it's a player house, and you literally, like, if you want to, can grow rocks for your various professions. And my God, I had my own little Ponzi scheme where I was make bank with this expansion because I had all sorts of alts growing the minerals, and then I would send them to my jewel crafter to process them into gems, and then would send them to those. Wait, I would send some of them to my transmuter to transmute a bunch of those gems into the most profitable ones, and then stick those profitable ones on the auction house. And this was when they'd made it so that you could do the auction house from phone. And I just remember setting that stuff all up in the morning, going to work, checking it on my lunch break, and sending screenshots to my husband and him going, well, now you're just bragging how much money I was making. And then they screwed it up in the next expansion and made it completely worthless,
Well, yeah, 'cause,
at least as far as jewel crafting.
yeah, I mean that's kind of WoW's MO is like they put something really cool in one expansion and it's just completely worthless next expansion.
But God, I was so rich this expansion. And this was the expansion I did get serious about my jewel crafting because they had added a bunch of jeweled panther mounts that were really expensive, and I managed to make them all. One of them where you had to make one of each of the other colors and combine them all together to make the jeweled onyx panther. And I managed to make those four colored panthers twice just so that I could do that. That was a lot of growing mining rocks and transmuting and farming and selling gems on the auction house to be able to afford that. Damn it, I did it, and I got my jeweled panthers. But I feel like the oh, go ahead.
I did not bother with that, but I will get into that next year.
Yeah, I feel like professions kind of hit their peak in this expansion, and I haven't messed with them as nearly as hardcore since, just because of all the things that they've done to them to just make them entirely useless. But yeah, that's definitely a complaint for next expansion. Caress Rang Wilds, a coastal rainforest with the Mogu located in the southernmost part of the continent. I only remember one of the big stories there being that there was a Tauren paladin who had a wife that was giving birth to twins that you had to help out, but then the wife died, and it was kind of a sad moment.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was, yeah, it was like a paladin versus druid thing was the main storyline for that area. And like some ancient relic that they were trying to find or something. I usually went north instead of doing Kasarang Wilds.
Yeah, because I feel like midway through Valley of the Four Winds, you have these monk disciples that all go off in their directions, and one of them goes south to Karasarang, and then one of them goes north to Kunlai Summit.
Yeah, Kunlun Summit was the one I usually did.
But I know at first I wanted to do all the zones for the meta, so I just followed everything south. And I forgot to mention that on the Alliance side, your impetus for going to Pandaria is that a ship with Varian's son gets shot down or gets shipwrecked. Who in the cutscene they call the White Pawn, and Varian has a freak out. I also forgot to mention the reason why Pandaria is available now is because during the Cataclysm, there were mists that sur or before the Cataclysm, there were mists that surrounded Pandaria, and the Cataclysm basically dispersed them, so you couldn't see Pandaria.
Yeah, but the cataclysm dispelled the mists.
Yeah, so that's why we're there now. But you, the reason why I'm bringing that up is because, you got the thing with Varian and his son and Anduin. Anduin shows up in Karasarang, whether you're Horde or Alliance, and you go run around and do a bunch of stuff with him. And then that's how he ends up at the one tavern by the Veiled Stair, that's also by the Black Market Auction House. And that's where he ends up hanging out with Rathian most of the expansion. And I hated that. I hated Rathian this expansion. I
I mean,
did not.
this was the first time he was introduced, too.
Well, he showed up in Kata at the end, but only if you played a rogue and was going for the Fangs of the Father,
Ah,
legendary.
I did not know that. Well, actually, he doesn't just show up at the end of Cataclysm. He actually shows up in the quest line in the Badlands.
Yeah, that was the quest line that made me cry.
Because you're saving his egg.
Yeah, and that's partly why I hated that character so much, because I'm like, Rhea gave up her egg for you, little prick. And I was so upset. And then in a later expansion they made him hot and all was forgiven. But I Rathian was just such a little bastard in this expansion. Moving on, you've got Town Long Steps, which is where you meet with the Shadow Pan and fight a bunch of the Manta. This is
Mantid.
east man manted this is east of the Great Wall that separates
No,
Dreadway
west.
west it, oh you're right it is west that separates Dreadways. I also had to make a point to work on my Shadow Pan reputation because it was the first time that I was able to get a feline mount on the Horde side that was actually an actual living breathing cat and not just a stone or spectral cat. Because you have no idea how much that bothered me first three expansions that I was never able to get a cat mount.
No, I know you well enough, Kelly.
Yeah,
I know
yeah.
how much that would bug you.
It's like I bought that one stone lion mount that its big feature was that it was account wide, but to me it just wasn't the same. So when I got those tigers from the Shadow Pan, I was very happy. Regardless, I don't remember a lot of this zone, to be honest. I always feel.
Well, we kind of skipped over Kunlai Summit a little bit.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, my bad. Kunlai Summit, one of my favorite areas, just because of how mountainy it is, and has the white tiger god who I loved, who whose entire shtick is imitating Mortal Kombat because he says test your might when you click on him. Also has some really fun quests like catching yaks to take them through the yak wash.
There was actually a little thing with that most people didn't notice. I actually saw it when I was leveling an alt. Is when you do the yak after doing that quest for the yak wash, the yaks were you got an extra discount if you went to buy the yaks.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so like even if you had like a maxed out reputation or something, because my hunter, I was not human, so I did not get like any racial bonus. But I noticed like, if you had the guild perk that reduced costs and whatnot, and then you did that, it was just a little bit more. It was just a little bit cheaper if you did it if you tried to buy them right after doing the yak wash, and that included the ultra mount, which was is the giant yak that had the transmogrifier and the vendor, of course.
Yeah, that was the big expensive but useful mount for that expansion. And I know I made a lot of money that expansion, but I can't remember if I bought that one then or went back after the fact. When I think it was 120,000.
Yeah, so I think it went down. I forget how much I saw it for. But yeah, you got just a little bit of an extra discount, and there's no indication for this or how long it lasts. But after you do that whole yak questline thing, the Kunlei summons also another area with some far with farms, mostly like the wheat, like grains farms there. But this was also the first zone that you actually saw the effects of the shawl actually precluding the area that wasn't due to some mess up of yours.
Yeah, there was a world boss there. I think it was the Shaw of Anger.
Yes, yeah, because it had been sealed in the summit of Kunlai, and one of the quest line there took you to the summit into the temple, and the Shaw of Anger had been released, and then it escapes. And then it became the world boss of Kunlai Summit. And then you would go to town long steps to try and stop, because the Mantid were invading. The Mantid and Pandarians, have been fighting for a long time, and that's actually part of the Shadow Pan's thing is to stop invaders, but basically fighting the Mantid. And you actually see them fighting the Mantid and another race that were basically an offshoot of the Tauren.
Jungle.
The Yongle, yeah, which is another Tauren race. It is an actual legit Tauren race, but they're not as civilized.
Yeah, I'm sad we've never got a bunch of the only Tauren variant we ever got, the Moose Tauren, because I liked the Yongle design. They were very yakky.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm still sad we haven't gotten the
Tonka.
no, the Jinyu,
Oh, the Jinyu, yeah.
which is an legit alliance race.
Yeah, for the longest time there were rumors that Jinyu and Hozen are gonna be allied races, but I don't think that ever happened. Or
Yeah, they've
obviously
never
that never
followed through with
happened.
it, but they are legit allied races for the Horde and the Alliance. And the Jinyu are just, I'm spacing the name.
Their
Murlocs.
skeleton is Blood Elf or
No,
Night
no, no.
Elf.
The Jinyu are Murlocs.
Yeah, just civilized, because
Yeah.
they look like koi fish.
No. In the course of going through every zone, there's these scrolls you can click on to gain lore of the thing. And then if you get to the Valley of the Four, not the Four Winds, what's the one in the center? The Veil of Eternal Blossom. Above the throne of Mogushan Palace, there's like this little vault area, and you can turn them into the lore walker, and he will recite the lore. And one of them is like, oh yes, this race, and you see these little like murlocs coming in. They bathed in the golden waters, and then you see them grow up from murlocs into the Jinyu. So throughout this expansion, I was like, where are the murlocs? Like every expansion has murlocs somewhere or something very similar to murlocs. This expansion didn't have it, and then boom, the
Okay,
Jinyu were the murlocs.
because I watched all of those little skits that you got from those scrolls, and I did not remember that. But I'm not saying I don't believe you. It's just somehow I missed that. I enjoyed a lot of those skits. Because I hadn't we've been kind of focusing on the zones. We didn't mention that a major NPC in this expansion is a character called Lore Walker Cho, who's voiced by Jim Cummings. And it's the most soothing Jim Cummings voice you will ever hear outside of Winnie the Pooh. To the point where when I watch older cartoons that he's in, like Rescue Rangers or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, he shows up. That's all I hear is Lore Walker Cho. But yeah, that little, I think that faction is called Lore Walkers, and
Yes.
and you go to their little library, and they have all kinds of cool things to click on. And yeah, that's where you can see the little skits. And I think later on, that's where you can go to do LFR on your own.
No. Where's
Oh,
L
is it?
is it?
I thought that there were NPCs that let you queue for solo LFR
Yeah,
there.
no, I'm trying to think. Is I don't think it's th no, it is there. It is there.
Yeah.
Because I run a lot of LFR because I collect a lot of the transmogs.
Yeah, so do I. What else? So we talked about Liontown Long Steps. Vale of Eternal Blossoms, that's kind of the center hub area that opens when you finish Kublai Summit in a very beautiful cutscene. Because I guess the Vale has been closed for centuries for reasons I cannot remember. Do
I
you?
it was like a sacred ground. That's
Yeah.
all I remember.
And spoiler alert, it gets trashed.
And not only in this expansion.
But yeah, and multiple expansions, which sucks because it was one of my favorite zones. But yeah, that's where your two temples that are faction hub areas are, and it's a lot of dailies that kind of come in that spot. Yeah, and I think that just leaves the Dread Wastes, which is kind of the crapsack area of this expansion. I feel like every expansion has at least one that's just completely devastated. Because in Burning Crusade, it was Netherstorm. In Lich King, it was Ice Crown. I don't know which one to consider it in Cadis, since Cadis zone kind of
Oh, for what now? The last zone?
for just ha having a well, yeah, having a the last zone just be devastated, because the Dread Waste is where you are allying with the Manta, the Manted, for reasons that I can't remember, and you're trying to wake up all of them a reason.
That is a plot line.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in the last zone, you're joining the Manted, a rebel faction of Manted, to fight the Manted.
Okay. And
Yeah.
don't they end up betraying you?
No, they are. So, the overarching storyline of the expansion had to do was a combination of Garrosh being wanting a horde, like a horde of old, strong, beat down everybody type of horde, the horde that invaded Azeroth, basically.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
his idea of the horde, and the Shaw, which the Shaw were basically what now? Old gods.
Yeah, remnants of an old god that fell apart.
That was destroyed, and turned into seven Shaw. And so basically the Manted, what are they? They're the
The Anuban, the spider people?
yeah, they're basically the spider people. They are a race that was given sentience by an old god, which is the one that the Shaw turned into.
Yasharl, I think, is its name, I
Yeah,
want to say.
Isharg or something. I don't care.
Because at the end, in the last patch, one of the cinematics is that Garrosh finds the thing's heart and gets in a fight, one of the Shadow Pan, and kicks his ass, and then literally kicks the heart into the Halls of Vale to awaken it.
Yeah, well, that was like the last cinematic. That was the thing that introduced Siege of Orgrimmar. One moment.
Yeah, because you started that raid in the Vale, ended up in a bar.
Yeah, and so yeah, the Manted group that you are helping are worshippers of the actual old god version, and not the corrupted queen who's been possessed by one of the Shaw. The Shaw fear, was it fear?
Yeah, I think so, because that's the final boss of that raid with that queen.
Okay.
Heart of
Yeah.
Fear. Yeah, because it's called the Heart of
Okay.
Fear, so.
Yeah, okay. There's seven of these things. So remembering which ones were where.
Yeah, because some of them are in dungeons, some of them are in raids, and then you have the one that's a boss.
Yep.
And then Garrosh becomes one at the end of the expansion, basically.
Yeah, well, he basically merges all of them together and becomes
Shaw
Shavoltron. And if you f and this was actually the so this was the one the expansion where they actually changed how raids worked after the first several raids.
Huh.
So Heart of Fear, was your normal LFR, normal mythic or
Oh, yeah, this was when they added Flex.
yeah, so this was the one where they added flex raids for Siege of Orgrimmar.
Yeah, so that you didn't have to have a full 25 people in the difficulty just accordingly.
Yeah, except for the mythic version where it's like still set number.
Yeah.
So that was very interesting because of the fact the and th this actually pisses me off as a raid farmer is all the ones until Siege of Orgrimmar outside of looking for raid. You have to pick a difficulty, and you're locked in on that difficulty.
Yeah, because I usually try to do the hardest one since that kind of gives the most and the best loot, 25 man heroic.
Well, so it's not 25 man or 10 man, so that doesn't matter
Okay.
for some of the older ones.
Oh, I'm
But
sorry, I'm thinking ICC.
yeah, you're thinking ICC. ICC is even worse. Don't get me started on the ICC one.
Because I did a lot of these raids during the day and, well, LFR at least, during the day and after the fact, because I wanted a lot of the transmog stuff in these.
Yeah, but oh no, I'm sorry, I'm mixing up LFR with the raid changes. But again, Siege of Orgrimmar was the first one that introduced the flex rating, so that was a new change, where adjusted difficulty, except for Mythic. Mythic still required 20.
That makes
It there
sense.
was no flex for Mythic, but normal and heroic. But any of the ones before the LFR system, you have to pick a difficulty and go with it. Anything after the LFR system, you could do all three versions of it without being locked to the entire raid.
Yeah,
So.
no, you're right. I'm remembering this now because part of some of the complaining that I heard was that people thought that they had to do flex and whatever. I think flex and normal because they were two different, if I'm remembering.
No, it was just the amount of loot that dropped.
Okay. I noticed that there were people complaining about flex reasons, but I mean, wow, people complain about everything in this game.
Yeah, it was because like say you had a the difficulty was not fully based on how many you took in. There was like ranges, so like 10 to 14 was one range. 50, so that's more the issue.
I see. Oh, and that was all of the base zones. In patch 5.2, they added the Isle of Thunder, which was like a huge mega zone that like had a progression system that as people did more stuff in it, more stuff would unlock. Not unlike the Firelands zone, but progression was sort of server wide, kind of like on Garage, and not tied to whatever did, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, because I remember on the map seeing the little meter that would kind of slowly go up every day, and more dailies. Oh my God, this expansion had so many dailies. People hated how many dailies there were. I didn't mind it because it gave me stuff to do.
Yeah, well, I think it was the reason why people hated it so much, was because you got to the point where there were so many you had to pick and choose which ones you actually did.
Because you could still only have 25 quests at a time,
Well, 25 daily quests, yeah.
and some of them were dated behind other factions. Like I know August Celestials was that I was trying to do first because then Shadowpan was behind that one, and that was the one that I was prioritizing. But then there were other kind of mini factions like the Anglers and the Half Hill Market, where there were also characters that had their own little reputation bars that you had to, so you had to become friends with these characters. And the game had lots of cooking that you had to do.
I mean, if you were into that.
I did it all just because I had nothing better to do.
Yeah, and like even the stuff with your farm was daily. So like you could, depending on what you were wanting to work on, you had to really pick and choose which dailies you wanted to do because you couldn't do them all. And that's not counting if you want to go back and work on stuff from a previous expansion either.
Oh, you had about a year and a half to do all of this stuff at the very least. A
At
lot of
the
time.
end, yeah, because once they dropped Siege of Orgrimmar, that was pretty pretty much it. This was the point where Blizzard was trying to get all their stuff out in a year, and that did not happen.
Nope. But yeah, I maxed out everybody's reputation in Half Hill Market. Because you'd find I was so mad at the time because people were like, I don't want to play Farmville in my WoW, and I'm like, actually, they're ripping off Harvest Moon. Thank you.
Very much. Very much Harvest Moon.
It's even to the point where you get a dog.
I mean, the character, the panda who you helped, even was kind of dressed like the Harvest Moon NPC, overalls, red shirt.
But I love that quest line though, just because it really did kind of make you feel like you were part of one big happy family after you raised up all of their reputations and they all cast their vote. I forgot to mention the ending cinematic of that particular area where every NPC you meet along the way kind of gathers together for like one big fight against the Mantid that are coming over the wall that gets partially destroyed. And it is one of the most epic moments that I have ever played in a video game just because of, everybody coming together to fight this one big threat to save their homeland. Like some of the personal stories in this particular expansion are just some of the best writing that I think WoW has ever done.
I don't think it's some of the best, but it was better than Cataclysm.
You go through a training montage in an area. I think that's in Dreadways. What else? There's a character in Taolong Steps that is a complete homage to Mulan and says lines from the "Make a Man Out of You" song while you're fighting with her. The Hosen are some of the most hilarious characters in the game. Talking about those Ukken Dookers.
I'm not sure how much they're. I got so lost in their talk because it's like I don't know if they're talking about poop, or more poop.
I love that particular quest line because there was one quest where you're like, no, you're too good for poop quests. We'll take care of that for you, making fun of the fact that every expansion up until that point has had poop quests.
No, there was a poop quest. I forget where it was, but there was one. I remember it. I vaguely remember it.
I also like the one in Valley of the Four Winds where you had to get a Mushan beast to knock stuff into the next town. Part of the
The Yak
reason.
Wash is probably the most memorable, though.
Part of why all of these kind of stick fresh in my mind was because in I have date down in 2024 that summer they did a Mists of Pandaria remix that was called a time running event where they g gave you a cloak that scaled with you and basically put you at was it, did they start you at level 1 or level 10?
I don't know. I did not
Oh, you
participate
didn't.
in
You didn't do that.
Remix. No, I did. I was very much done with WoW at the time.
I think your first character started at level 1 when you did the tutorial area for how time walking worked, and then when all was said and done, you could skip 10 levels and skip that tutorial and go straight into Pandaria. And this was called Mists of Pandaria Remix. And the whole point was just you're super massively powerful and you get to level up fast and basically have fun playing through Mists again. And you got all kinds of cool rewards like cool these really are a bunch of variations of the mounts that already existed, including some of the ones that like only variants of ones that only dropped from like Mythic Siege. Because you leveled so fast and because this cloak scaled with you, you could be ridiculously powerful. So in most of the raids that you didn't even have to worry about, queuing as a tank or a healer because you're going so fast. You didn't even have time to worry about that stuff. It was such a fun throwback to Mists, and the fact that you got to be o overpowered and get all of these cool rewards while doing this was such a fun thing. And then I said, I hope they do this for Legion, and then they did it for Legion, and I never touched it because I was done with WoW at that point.
The new expansion is pretty good.
That's what I've heard. I've had no desire to play it because I've had single player stuff that I've wanted to play.
Yeah.
Some of it backtrack. Oh, I forgot to mention you get to raise a cloud serpent, a eastern dragon to be a mount. And the best part is that you get to race them. And this was before the dragon riding thing.
Yeah, no, that was one of the factions to, and some of the actual rewards from the dungeons and mount drops from the raids were from the were variations of those.
Because I got one that was like a starry version of a cloud serpent from a raid.
Yeah, so they also added later in 5.2 not just the Isle of Thunder but also the Isle of Giants, which
Oh
was
yeah,
bit.
that was where you could if you were a hunter, you could go tame dinosaurs.
Yep. Go tame dinosaurs and get like a specific like dinosaur mount if you collected enough bones from the island. And one of the world bosses was there too, Undasta.
Yeah, I never went there, and I don't know why. I think I just got busy with other stuff and trying to do
Isle of
the
Thunder.
Isle of Thunder.
Yeah, actually, that was interesting. 5.2, they introduced two world bosses.
Yeah, because is it the other one Oolong or not? I might be blanking now.
It was the Thunder Serpent that's on the Isle of
Yeah,
Thunder, yes.
that one. And we forgot to mention one last zone because it was one of the last zones released, the Timeless Isle.
That is a weird zone.
It was kind of supposed to be a run around and explore stuff zone. You couldn't fly. There were lots of it basically kind of set the stage for a lot of how WoW is today, where there's lots of secrets you can find, lots of rares to kill for mounts and other treasures, and you're kind of meant to just t take it in and explore it.
Yeah, I remember the one of the big things for that was there was an area of the Timeless Isle you could only get to if you had a legendary cloak
Yeah.
to get to the world boss that was there, which is a design choice.
Yeah, because that particular legendary cloak was something that came from Rathian that you
Yeah, and
were.
it was something you sort of worked on throughout the entire expansion, which was kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
And there was four versions of the cloak, one for basically each main talents or main stats. So there was like a tanking cloak, there was a DPS cloak, there was a healing cloak, and then there was a casting DPS cloak.
But I like really liked that idea, and they kind of carried that idea forward with a lot of different things, like the artifact weapon in Legion, or I think there was a legendary ring
Yeah.
in Draenor.
Yeah, more so the legendary ring. Legion, they did not really do that. But we'll get into that when we talk about Legion in 2 years.
But the interesting thing about the Timeless Isle was that that they said that that's how they were going to try to approach zone design going forward. And that was kind of an interesting little omen that came true in the next expansion in an interesting way that pissed a lot of people off, including myself, to tease our next WoW show in a year. What else was there? I thought that there were some. What am I trying to say? I felt like 5.1 and 5.3 were kind of nothing burger patches compared to the Thunder King patch, 5.2, and the Siege of Orgrimmar patch because they really didn't add a whole lot.
They added stuff that was giving context for the story, but yeah, there was not like actually a lot to them.
Yeah, because Vaughn and I both kind of did those two little factions that opened up and both kind of like, well, that's it. This patch kind of sucks. An interesting thing the Timeless Isle did was had one of the first pet battle tournaments that I was all in. There was an interesting chain of you level up these pets to level up these pets to hopefully let you get an edge with this tournament. And that's how pet battling was ever since. And to this day, some of the pets from the Raiding with Leashes achievement for that first or that first Raiding with Leashes are still some of the best considered some of the best battle pets in the game. Particularly the Chromius, who had a very devastating combo with Howl and Arcane Blast that could pretty much nuke most teams. And then the Noobish Idol, which, while not very high damaging, could last a very long time against certain fights. depend because it had an ability called Sandstorm that really buffed it against certain types of creatures.
Yeah, so, like Mists of Pandaria, a lot of people were actually pissed off about this expansion when it first announced.
Yeah, they thought that WoW was going soft. They didn't like a lot of the UI stuff that changed, like the pop-up windows that would show talking heads, because they said that that took them out of combat, or rather took them out of the role-playing experience. I thought that that complaint was kind of dumb, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the talent trees was the big one. Yeah. So, I'm not sure what else was really added to this expansion from this. So, I think that's pretty much the overview.
Yeah, as far as availability, you can, I mean, obviously all the stuff is still in the game, but if you want the authentic experience, Myst Classic is going on now. I'm curious if they're going to do Warlords Classic or if they want to reopen that canon.
I mean, at this point, they've kind of set themselves up.
Established a pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt, as far as Myst goes, I felt like it got the game in a spot where when I went back to play a little bit of Myst Classic to, because there was a promotion where if you did the Pandaren starter zone, you got a mount, a special mount detail. And I went back and did that starter zone and just thinking like, wow, I feel like WoW was really at its best during expansion. Just, they had fixed a lot of the stuff that really annoyed me, and the content was just so fun. And that's why I put hundreds of hours into Myst Remix and did that particular starting zone, because they had a similar. Well, I famously said when WoW Classic came out to call me when Lich King Classic came, and then it came, and they had a similar promotion where if you did the Death Knight starting zone, you got a mount in retail. And I did that one, and it was just like, man, I forgot how much stuff was just annoying me in this expansion, like having not having account wide mounts or pets, or not having AoE looting, just kind of little annoyances that I had long forgotten about. But I didn't feel that way when I did the little Myst promotion for Myst Class. This was like, that was like peak WoW for me. Up until that point, it was the most alts that I had leveled. I want to say that I had five that I was hopping on at any given time doing Raid Finder, or just running around in dungeons, or just doing dailies.
Again, there's only so much dailies you can take before
No,
it
I.
becomes monotonous.
Yeah, no, and I get it. I just, in game for this particular expansion, I didn't get bored with nearly as quickly as I had Cata or Warlords, which we'll be talking about next. But that, like I said, that's a whole other. I just thought that it was an expansion that really was really polished. And supposedly Blizzard had come out and said that the reason why this expansion was kind of lighthearted was because the next couple of expansions are going to be dark.
Oh well. Not that they weren't. Not.
I don't know how I feel. I definitely felt like Legion had some dark topics. I'm not sure about, but that being said, do you have anything else you want to add before we hit the round table?
This expansion also followed into their pattern of releasing books related to it that fill in a lot of plot holes that lead into the next expansions, and I was not happy with that, of course.
Yeah, because I didn't touch a lot of those books, especially that one that really, like, you had to read to understand what was going on, which, yeah, I thought was kind of dumb.
Yeah,
And I.
because you had the one for the stuff that was happening in regards to Proudmoore and that city, and then you also had the one that was the bridge between this expansion and Warlords.
And yeah, that plot line was like some major crap going on in between expansions. Let's just say that Garrosh has plot armor, or rather, at the end of this expansion, one of the characters, I think it was Varian, was gonna kill Garrosh. And what is the name of that panda character? The main panda character from the Shadow Pinch. I keep wanting to call him Shang Tsung, and that's not it. Shadow Taran Zhu. He was like, no. Garrosh has to answer for his crimes. And boy, where he never does.
No, he does. He does.
Well, he has a trial, but never goes to jail or whatever happens to him. Yeah, the game gets all timey-wimey after this.
I mean, it wasn't timey-wimey before.
No, you're right. It was
Yeah.
just even worse.
So, but yeah, that's I think most of the major stuff for gameplay and plot.
Still one of my favorite expansions of all time.
It's a beautiful expansion. Like I definitely enjoyed Panda. It wasn't like a I don't think it was a great expansion, but it was not as bad as a lot of people really make it out to be.
I mean, I liked the lighthearted stuff and the beautiful scenery and the fact that it was a very whimsy expansion, put it that way. I know that there are people out there that want WoW to be grim dark and always the heavy metal aesthetic, but I think there's room for some Z game that was definitely this expansion. And the Kung Fu Panda jokes just got old. I'm like, you guys realize that Pandaren were around before that movie was a thing, right? This was a joke from the
I
RTS
mean, it's still
games.
a joke.
Yeah. And I still have some of my panda characters to this day.
Yeah, no, I actually really liked the look of the pandas. They were very well designed.
At the time, they were some of the best looking character models in the game before they completely redid all the characters.
I think they're still some of the best looking character models in the game.
Yeah, they're very expressive. I appreciate that the Pandaren girls are a little bit tubby like me, so that they share my body type, so I feel more connected to them.
They have more bounce to the ounce. I think that's one of the jokes.
Yeah.
Unless they removed it because it's too sexualized.
I know that a lot of the more saucy jokes got from, and that makes me sad.
Let me sing you the love song of my people. Come and get it.
I think my favorite one was I'd tap that keg. Pretty much all of their sillies were either about drinking or eating.
And they leaned into their large sizes for some of the flirts.
Yeah.
They are a fun race. I actually really do enjoy the pandas. They're not my favorite race, but they are definitely up there for one of the best races they have introduced.
They were my favorite until the Volpera got added, and then the Volpera are now my favorite just because I love foxes. And one of the Pandaren female sillies is so we've got the Tauren and the Worgen. Wait, which one's the talking dog and which one is the talking cow? Oh, I hate all of these animal people. In reference to the fact that WoW has talking animal people and has always had talking animal people.
Always had talking
That
animal
was
people.
a direct jab at the people that bitch about WoW being too furry.
Well, technically, they've not all. No, they've always had animal people because of the Tauren since Warcraft 3.
Yep. And they'll probably continue to have that animal people. Where am I, Shavara? Oh, but I think we're ready for the round table, unless you have anything else you wanted to add.
Not really. I mean, I had stopped even like remotely being. Like even like remotely being a raider at this point, because I had kids, yeah, I had kids, I was working nights, so like my schedule just did not preclude being like a raider, so I kind of gave up trying to be like an actual like hardcore raid or even like medium core raider. I just I would do LFR. I would occasionally sign up to do raids. Looking for group raids. Occasionally, I'd get in. A lot of times, I wouldn't because it's like, oh, your item level's too low. Oh, you're too. Yeah, it's like whatever. So I didn't even worry. I didn't worry about that stuff anymore. So I just kind of enjoyed the expansion
Yeah,
and.
and Mo, I did so much LFR this expansion just because it was a thing to do, and it let me get to experience all of these great raids without having to, actually be good at the game. Because I'm sorry, I'm not a very skilled player. I'm just mash buttons until things die. And some of my favorite raids are this particular particular expansion, like the spring one, if you remember. I could be blanking on the name of it now. It was the one that just had four bosses that was that one was one of my favorite raids because it was easy to get in and out of, and it had some of the neatest bosses that I had ever seen, like that one water elemental that was corrupted, and I think you had to fight a Shaw in there too.
The last boss was one of the Shaw. And this expansion was also, I don't remember if they did this in Cataclysm, but this was the first expansion where some of the raids actually had major differences to the fights if you did them on like Mythic. In fact, the Isle of Thunder, if you did it on Mythic, there's a whole extra boss.
Oh wow. It's Terrace of Endless Spring was the raid that I was trying to remember the name of.
If you didn't know, Isle of Thunder, the that raid, if you do it on Mythic and you beat the last boss, there's actually another last boss.
Oh, I didn't know that because I had only ever did it on LFR.
In fact, and this is actually where I start really getting pissed off with WoW, is because those last bosses become very important to the plot of the game, because that last boss is Ra'Den, the Titan.
Oh, wow.
Or not the Titan, but the I forget if he is an actual Titan or whatnot. But La Shen was, using Ra'Den's power to power himself, with the lightning and whatnot. And if you beat La Shen, you then had to go beat Ra'Den, who was the bound Titan, Titan or Observer or whatever they're called. I forget where he falls. And
I know who you're talking about, though. Wasn't he in Witch King and Ulduar somewhere? Or
no.
am I thinking of somebody else?
You're
I think
thinking
of.
someone else, but he's one of
Okay.
those ones, yes.
I never knew about that boss or have ever seen him.
And you only had like 30 attempts to try and fight him.
Oh, wow.
Now, of course, you can go in and stomp him like no one's business,
If I ever resub, I need to go do that.
and so, but this was the expansion where they really started doing that, where there's like extra bosses or that only show up if you do them on Mythic, and unfortunately, it's very story relevant to what is going on, especially with the Ra'Den, because of the fact this is how you free Ra'Den, A, and then he becomes important in later expansions. So it's like one of these NPCs that shows up out of nowhere, and it's like, how do we know about this character? And it's like, oh, well, he was part of this raid. It's like, no, he wasn't. Oh, you didn't. You had to like go free him on Mythic. It's like, what? So, anyways, yeah, that goes to my other complaint. It's like they build systems and then drop them, or heavily reduce them, and or they introduce elements in these very minute ways, which is awesome if you're one of the hardcore raiders, because it's like, it's an Easter egg for them, but then they make them very important story elements. It's like the whole Sindragosa fight in the Bastion of Twilight from Cataclysm. It's like, which is another one that they did it where you have to beat it on the hardest difficulty, which was 25 man heroic, and then you go fight Sindragosa. Not Sindragosa. It was the dragon from the book The Day of the Dragons. And she's the one who's like corrupting all the fire eggs that were stolen at the end of, that special raid that they added at the end of Wrath of the Lich King.
The Ruby Sync.
She's the one who's corrupting all those eggs from the Ruby Sanctum and turning them into Twilight Dragons.
Gotcha. No, I agree. I don't think they should lock story content behind some of that stuff. Because I'm certainly never gonna see any of that content until after fact. I guess that's what YouTube is for. But I've complained before about how WoW today does way too much stuff. The people that like to do mythic seasonal stuff and not enough stuff. People like me that just want to hop in and play for a bit and hop back out.
It is not a casual friendly game for some aspects of it, which is something, but and that is a contrast for what we will be talking about next week, but we'll get into that after our roundtable.
Yes, let's take a brief break with a musical interlude, and then we'll come back with our favorite stuff, Miss.
Thank you.
And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are now getting into the roundtable. Our thoughts, our feelings, our memories. Like I always like to ask, did you have a favorite moment from the game?
I honestly loved seeing Chen Stormstout, I want to say. And him and his niece traveling around through the different zones. That was always fun for me.
Yeah, when you first meet her and Lili Stormstout, and she says, "Wow, these people are funny looking," and Chen goes, "Well, to them, you're the funny looking one." It's just such a cute little interaction since Lili is a little kid, and yeah. I've heard that Lili has an adult model now.
Oh, I haven't noticed.
Yeah, I don't know where she is in Midnight, but that's
well, I know I know that one of the I'll have to go looking because I want a next sub because of the fact that I am through to current content on Midnight. But I do know that they've actually, you know, we've seen over time that they have grown characters up. Like Varian has had Varian's son has had like three different models.
Yep. The little kid that you get as an apprentice for cooking in this expansion becomes a very infamous character in subsequent expansions.
Yeah, for cooking. For cooking. You know, infamous for cooking.
Yeah. Nomi, how did you light wine on fire? Ooh, Legion spoilers. Well, actually, I think BFA spoiler, but never mind.
But just the interactions between like them was always fun. Where you know, because she's very serious and Chen is very go with the flow.
When she follows you around during a couple of quests and just is so knowledgeable about how games work. When she's like, "Hey, there's a waterfall. There's always treasure behind the waterfall." I don't know if there's treasure behind that particular waterfall. I have two funniest moments. A favorite moment and a funniest moment. My favorite moment is when you meet Chen Stormstout for the first time, and he always talks about what race you are and kind of goes into, kind of says unique things about whatever race you happen to be at the time. I think this is only for the Horde, by the way, because there's a completely different interaction with the Alliance. But just the fact that, like, "Oh, you're a Tauren. You're a proud and noble people." I thought it was like such a neat touch. And you go meet with him and learn about Pandaria's history, and he learns about your history, and it's just such. I love Lore Walker Cho. Spoiler from my favorite character. But as far as the funniest moment, it's in Valley of the Four Winds when you're dealing with one of the farmers who had vermin come and steal their fruits. And vermin are like this game's sort of Murloc, since they're kind of like an annoying little scraggly little rabbit types. And they stole a bunch of vegetables, and vermin don't like turnips. And they were using the turnips as punching bags and just beating the shit out of them. And then for some reason, you turn the corner to, because it's where the quest marker is, and you see all these watermelon flags and them floating in the river, and they're racing them like boats. And for some reason, that made me laugh my ass off. And then you get the fruits and vegetables, and you take them back to the farmer, and the quest text says, "Farmer so-and-so sees the bruised turnip and the soaking wet watermelons and says, 'What the hell happened to these?'" And that just put me in hysterics. Something about that flavor text just cracked me the hell up. I mean, that whole zone is full of funny quests like that, but that one in particular just had me in hysterics.
The vermin are a creature.
They're so funny. Lore Walker Cho is my favorite character in this expansion, because every time he showed up just since then, it's just made me endlessly happy.
My personal favorite, going to funny moments, is one of the first raids, Mogushan Vaults. You're actually following Lore Walker Cho through the raid, and at one point he gets distracted and he goes off and he starts reading these scrolls, and then like these ghosts appear, and you start fighting all these ghosts ghost monsters while he's just is in the background being like, oh, they're talking about this emperor. And you're like, so he's off, just reading scrolls, and there's chaos going around on behind him, basically.
Oh, an honorable mention for funniest moment is at the end of Stormstout Brewery when one member of the Stormstout family is kind of going crazy trying to brew beer, and he's just rattling off nonsense, throwing things into the pot and making these beer elementals that you've got to fight. And I'll never forget, I always kind of chuckle when he yells, "Peppers!"
Yes,
for some
yes,
reason.
yes, yes, yes. No, yes. Peppers.
It's the per the oh and the little hosen dance party, that's the first fight. That's also pretty hilarious. That whole dungeon is actually pretty
That
hilarious.
whole dungeon. Yeah, you're fighting through a brewery that is on fire. And then, like, at the end of it, it's like, Uncle, what are you doing? It's like, I am making the perfect brew. What are you talking about? The place is on fire.
Running into the having to fight a vermin that summons other vermin that you have to bonk with a hammer.
It is a wild dungeon.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite character at all?
Oh, I mean, it's hard to narrow down. Lord Walker Cho's great. Chen and Lili Stormstout's great. There's a lot of really good characters from this expansion.
Yeah, I like Chen and Lili too. I have a Chen Stormstout plush that my husband got me for Christmas one year. That's kind of special to me. So many memorable characters in this expansion. The Jade Witch that turns people into jade statues, which that section of the game is basically a horror movie. I didn't like those weird withered, I don't know what they were called, that they were like had one eye and kind of looked like scarecrows. I didn't like those mobs. Those creep me out.
Oh, the weird plant, the like anorexic treants.
Yeah, something like that. They were really creepy.
I mean, there was the weird. I didn't like the weird beholder head type of boss from.
Oh God, I could never get that, but the maze part of that boss fight right. I always died.
Yeah, that the maze fight. I finally got it right a few times. Of course, now I can go in and just raffle stomp it. On Mythic, I'm not. I like your. The game is powerful enough now. You can basically do that whole dungeon on Mythic.
I also like that one fight against the giant bug where you had to shoot at it, or you had to DPS its legs and stay out from underneath it.
Yeah, that's also that. Some of the boss fights were very unique. They did try and like make some of the boss fights more more interesting than just Tank and Spanx. And which is I mean, unfortunately, we'll get into this more in the next in an expansion to where this begins to make issues. So, but
Did you have a favorite zone?
I really liked the Jade Forest, the very first zone. I mean, a lot of the zones were very nice overall in the expansion, but I really liked the first zone. It was green, it was lush, it was very colorful.
Because my favorite zone ended up being the Valley of Four Winds. Just because I'm from Kansas, so my whole area is rolling farmland, and that particular zone looked like rolling farmland in the spring in Kansas when it actually looks beautiful, before the summer comes in and dries out all the grass. I just think that that's a really beautiful zone with lots of really neat topography. And it's one of my favorite zones to level in because of all the cute little humor and just stuff that happens. Runner up goes to Isle of Thunder just because of how unique that particular zone was
For the time.
for the time. Definitely felt epic. And do you have any memories tied to this game at all?
Well, as I mentioned, so this came out in what, 2012? 20. So this was a month and a half before my oldest son was born, and this was 1 month before I started my current job. So those are my memories tied to this game.
Well, like I said, I remember being very disappointed that Siege of Orgrimmar was coming out the week of my honeymoon. Just because it's like, dang it, I want to get into that raid. Because I liked playing I mean, I was so into this whole expansion that I wanted to play everything new right off the bat. But obviously my honeymoon's the better choice. I wasn't gonna skip that. Just wow, it was gonna be there when I got back. Plus, when I felt like that week, people still hadn't figured out how to run that raid anyway, because it was like months before I finally got to take a shot at Garrosh. Because we kept getting stuck on the General Nazgrim fight for whatever reason.
General Nazgrim was not an easy f there. So this is the start of where you start seeing the issue that WoW had until the very most recent expansion, because they finally banned it, or not banned it, but changed how UI interaction works with mods. Is there was basically an arms race between deadly boss mods and WoW for fights, and they literally started designing fights around add-ons.
Okay, so I guess you couldn't see cooldowns properly in that fight if you were using DBM, is what you're saying?
No. That's not what I'm saying. Basically, the game designed all of its boss fights around players using add-ons.
Oh, okay. So if you didn't use DBM, you were screwed to fight.
Basically any fight. In fact, there's one fight specifically from Shadowlands where they made the fight where DBM can't even assist with it because it has a random attack pattern.
Oh, okay.
Like so there was literally an arms race between DBM and WoW to try and make the fights work, and it just yeah it, this was where you start seeing that, and this is where I really got fed up with the rating scene in World of Warcraft, was because of the fact it's like, oh, you have to have DBM, you have to have this, you have to have this other thing. It's like, I just want, one of the reasons why I like Final Fantasy XIV's raids is because you do not need to have a well, mods aren't allowed. There are mods that exist. And there are even some that can be used in fights.
Because I had a point to make, and I mostly use DBM to help me not stand in crap, because I'm the type of, I'll be just DPSing away and not notice that floor is on fire.
there's a different mod for that, and that's called GTFO.
Yeah, I think I use that. You're
Yeah.
right. But that's one thing I like about Final Fantasy 14, is that if there's bad on the ground, they telegraph it very clearly, with nice big red stuff.
Not so much if you're doing like the high end rating, but that's a different discussion. So.
So it's a much better job at with WoW, especially since with WoW I feel like I don't know what I can stand in and what I can't just because of that. Whereas 14 makes it extremely clear. Red bad, blue good to a degree. But yeah, I think that's my most prominent memory. I was being disappointed. I kind of told some of my other memories, like checking my auction house and sending screenshots to my husband of how much money I made that day and how he got at me, that kind of stuff. I have a lot of these tied miss, because it was
It was around your
probably,
honeymoon
I was probably most
and your wedding.
active. Yep, because I made my cake topper for our wedding cake a tarn and a butt elf, since that was our tunes, because I wanted to have a dirty cake top, and that tarn and butt elf still rest on the shelf in my dining room this very day in a shadow box. Miss one of my favorite because I like this already. Now in 2 weeks, I've heard that this Final Fantasy 14 is a lot of people's favorites. Endwalker.
It depends on who you ask.
I've heard the story is.
Yes, but anyways, yes, 2 weeks will be Endwalker and I will be back to rant.
And we'll have Noodle on. Hopefully we won't go a few days straight. Though, I might have you guys do what I did with the WoW sheet, where you pin a feature zones and maybe talk about some of those and just kind of do a very brief song story some, because I know that particular story is wrapping up like many expansions.
Yes.
So, but yeah, that being said, thank you, Tam, for hanging out with me tonight. I could talk Miss for hours because of how awesome it was.
No, it's been fun. Mists, as I said, it's not, a lot of people that may not have liked Mists at the time, but I think it's still one of the better expansions they have made overall. all.
But put it this way, my research today, just kind of going back into it, reading all the stuff, was like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh my God, I love this expansion so much. I got so nostalgic. I want a Mop Remix too. But preemptive thank you to Platy for editing while on vacation. We love you very much, Platy, and thank you for all your us. And of course, thank you to the listener for hanging out with us. Tune in a pair of weeks where we're going to talk about Final Fantasy 14 and Walk. Have a good rest of your week, and we shall talk to you later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.